AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's RUBRIK.com.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Brought to you by Standard Life. Retirement specialists getting you ready for your second life.
Now, I'm joined by Noel O'Connell, who is outgoing CEO of European Movement Ireland, and Mark Hennessy, Ireland and Britain editor of the Irish Times. And where we'll start is with the front page of your own paper, Mark. Interesting story. We saw the case of the billionaire of Coolmore Stud, John Magnier, suing over what he alleged was a deal to buy neighbouring lands. The court, of course, decided that that was not a deal and that a contract had not been established. What's interesting from his perspective is what the court has now established about the evidence that he provided.
Yes, indeed. And I think there might be many people who are having bad mornings today, but I doubt if anybody is having as bad a morning as John Magnier is in Coolmore, because it's some ruling by Mr. Justice Max Barrett, and he made no attempt to soften it. He said that the evidence given by Magnier during the hearing was entirely false, quote, and lying. That is what happened here, he said, when he made an exceptional legal costs order against the businessman. And I think, as I understand it, the costs are up to $6 million. Now, you know, John Magnier can afford $6 million in ways that the rest of us can't. But certainly having a statement made like that about him in a court by a high court judge, that will hurt even more.
Although, ironically, the costs of the legal proceedings are almost the delta between the offer that he made and the winning bid for the piece of property. He was originally said to have offered $15 million and it was sold for $22 million. The six makes up the difference.
Well, it does. But, I mean, isn't that always the way when you bring lawyers into any conversation that the costs go through the roof? I mean, it was an incredibly long-running case and with very senior legal talent brought on board. So, you know, both sides invested heavily in it. As I understand it, the contract for the sale of the property to Maurice O'Regan, the Irish businessman who's based in New York, it's accepted, but it still hasn't gone through. So these
nor can it, because apparently this is now under appeal. So until that appeal resolved, it can't sell.
They can't sell. Yeah.
Interesting that Mr. Justice Max Barrett would go to the extent of being that declarative in his views, because what Colm Keane is reporting is he has a quote saying that the judge said there was a verb for reshaping a story to objectively suit demonstrated facts. The judge said, quotes, lying. And that is what happened here. That cannot go unmarked by the court. Whatever about the $6 million, you'd imagine John Magnier can't be delighted about the reputational damage.
No, the reputational damage is going to be serious for somebody of his standing and for somebody of a man who believes he's worthy of standing, you know, to be frank. So these things are going to hurt. There's no doubt about it. You know, equally, it's not going to, you know, ruin his fortune or anything else like that. But this is news. I doubt very much if he expected to be treated quite so harshly in the final cost ruling, as it turned out.
53106, if you want to get in touch, at a cost of 30 cents, or 087-1400-106. On the subject of hurt, Noel O'Connell, there is an awful lot of it being laid bare in Fianna Fáil. Micheál Martin faced the Ord Cóirle. Now, the Ord Cóirle is sort of the board of directors and wider fellow travellers of Fianna Fáil. It's the single most powerful grouping within the party, and it is deeply, deeply unhappy, according to Fionnán Sheehan.
Yeah, Fionnán has a great piece, doesn't he, in today's Independent on that, and he said he spoke of it being a cross between a TD's constituent clinic and a priest addressing his parishioners. So it seems like it was certainly an interesting meeting, and of course the report into by Fianna Fáil into that, into the their presidential election nomination. That's all going to drop the week before Christmas. So I would expect, Anton, you and your colleagues will still have something to talk about in the couple of days before Christmas, separate to all things presents and Santa. But yeah, it's and I think a really interesting part that Fianna Fáil spoke about was the Taoiseach talking about a reform of the nomination process being worthy of consideration. And I know if any of us talk to people, a big comment and I think a takeaway from the whole presidential election more broadly was the lack of choice people felt that they that were on the ballot paper and the number of spoiled votes.
So I think Mark Hennessy just growled.
What was that? No, I've heard this argument being made on numerous occasions, and I have to say I frankly find it bloody irritating. The same rules produced, what, 7 candidates in 2011, 5 in 2018. The problem that we had on this occasion is that we had candidates who were too damn lazy to do the work to get on board. Sean Gallagher very precedently said at McGill Summer School in July, and he told about how he went and did his work to get a nomination in 2011, and he was on the road with a driver from January going around houses of councillors all over the country. And in mid-February in 2011, on the day that Barack Obama spoke to whatever number of tens of thousands of people that he spoke to in College Green, he was in Paddy Wall's house in outside Athlone, who's an independent councillor on Roscommon County Council. And the tea was being served as the news headlines were coming on. And Paddy's said to him, God, he said, I'm surprised that you're here today. I thought you'd be in Dublin to meet Obama. And Gallagher leaned in over the turf fire and he said, the only problem is, he said, Paddy, he said, Barack Obama doesn't have a vote on Roscommon County Council. You do. And every other candidate.
Now, hang on for a minute. As legitimate as it may be to query the amount of work that some of the independent candidates did, the reality is, and you would know this, two things happened. First of all, one major player dropped out for health reasons, which was Mairead McGuinness, and there's not much that we can do about that. But there are a number of candidates who we know did not run because they thought the campaign would be too bruising for them. And that surely is a problem. We need some way to get a better cohort of candidates who don't feel they will be introduced to the process.
There is nothing that Micheál Martin is planning today that will in any way make it easier for a candidate once they are on the list. The nature of presidential elections in the last 15 years is that they've become a brutal contest. That doesn't change if we somehow come up with an easier nomination, a route to nomination. Right, there's an argument behind having the rules as they were, having people doing the work, and this talk that, you know, Harris banned people in Fine Gael to vote or whatever. If candidates like Marie Steen had been on the road from January, had been talking to councillors and impressing in whatever way all of them would hope to impress, there would not have been diktats coming from Dublin, because Dublin would not have been able to enforce a diktat.
Well, on that topic, Noel, the quote in here says that, picking up on one of the points that was made by Margaret Conlon in the meeting, that the Taoiseach said a reform of the nomination process was worthy of consideration, but that such a change potentially includes a referendum. Surely the issue in respect of Fianna Fáil's involvement in the nomination process was they all feel that this candidate was railroaded by the leadership. That's not a process reform. That's a stop telling us what to do reform.
Well, I mean, yeah, it certainly was an interesting one, and of course I would know Billy Kelleher well in his role as an excellent and outstanding MEP, and I think how it's very clear.
Billy Kelleher, of course, being the underbidder who wanted a shot and feels terribly aggrieved, just right to remind us.
Well, still an outstanding MEP and doing a great job. But I think Fianna Fáil's piece picks up a lot of some of the hurt. I think that you know, when you talk to a lot of people in Fianna Fáil, that they're certainly feeling on that, and of course in terms of the timing and the different candidates, you know, or non-candidates. I think, you know, Mary Hanafin was also mentioned in reference. So how the whole process is done internally, I guess, for Fianna Fáil is something that the report is going to look at. But the fallout continues. The conversation is ongoing. And I know I think it's going to be interesting for President Connolly next year in terms of her role when Ireland will hold the rotating EU presidency. There'll be a lot of focus and spotlight on it. So I think watch the space.
Now, Mark, you have been covering matters pertaining to Irish politics for a while. Can I just bounce one quote off you? Donny Cassidy in this piece by Fiona Hansheen is quoted as saying, "I have never seen the organisation, that being Fianna Fáil, so hurt in my 60 years as a member of Fianna Fáil." Now, my memory may not be 100%, but I recall other instances like Charlie Haughey ripping off Brian Lenihan's liver transplant fund to the tune of about 200 grand. And there were the small matter of some tribunals and some planning scandals.
Yeah, but
surely a bit of perspective applies.
Yeah, but you weren't being asked to support for a blue shirt. I mean, let's put this in context here. You know? and for somebody like Tony, that would hurt an awful lot more.
I have to give the quote that this begins with in Fionn's piece where it says, "If you're a member of the Fianna Fáil party, I'm surprised your hand didn't burn when you picked up the Fine Gael leaflet," the Taoiseach was told.
I mean, it's interesting on that, because if you look at Darragh O'Brien, who did go out canvassing with Heather Humphreys, and I know one other minister did, I think. Fianna Fáil minister, that is. I can't think of any more who did. That's the sort of thing that will be remembered in the long grass by members of Fianna Fáil. And Dara is somebody who would see himself as being a future leader. So, you know, those kind of things, it does show you that contrary to what people say, there is a difference between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael.
Oh, grassroots, civil war ain't dead.
Well, not only that, but there's also that they're a very different cohort of Irish society about how they look at things, you know. So this stuff is more meaningful.
Are they really?
Oh, yeah, they are. Yeah. I mean, I'm generalizing hugely. There are people on both sides who'd be very similar, but there are blocks in both parties who fundamentally look at the world in very, very different ways. And I think to their credit on both sides, and you'd want them to look at things in very different ways. I just don't quite understand what Fianna Fáil are kind of hoping to achieve with this, other than bleed. I would suggest to anybody listening, if they're interested, that to pay close attention to any stories they read in advance of the publication of the report, because I suspect the amount of spinning that will go on and the part of people will
be... Do we know when the report is going to land?
As I understand it, it's before Christmas, but I don't have a date.
We're already sort of drowning in a sea of mince pies and mulled wine, aren't we? I mean, as timing goes.
Yeah, we saw a story. Well, I presume that's part of the logic of it, that they'll put it out when we've all gone on the tear, and, you know, therefore the punters won't pay any attention to it. Maybe that'll work. I suspect it won't. It'll become more of a problem for them.
Why? Why?
Because it'll just become a kind of a sore that will just stay there until January and it'll resume.
Will we dig it all back in January? Like, that's another 2.5 weeks.
The good, sensible members of the public have already moved on to other things. But in terms of Fianna Fáil and in terms of certain elements of the media who have to cover this stuff, this is going to remain as a continuing sore. You know, they have a problem in that. Why Micheál Martin handled this in the way that he did, I will never quite understand, because to be operating under such a cloud of secrecy so late into August and into early September, and then producing a candidate who at first glance did seem to have, you know, a certain street cred and name recognition and all of the rest of it. But you don't do that without... The point I can't understand is there was no need for him to do that. He could have had conversations with the party. They could have come up with a couple of names. This was more about the fact that Micheál wanted to do it on his own rather than the fact that there wasn't anybody there who didn't have an opinion that might have been useful.
53106, if you have a viewer, 087-1400-106, text saying, "The system does not need to be changed. Your guest is 100% right. It was pure laziness by entitled one babies." I wonder if that meant to be wannabes. As I say, 53106 if you want to get in touch. Noel, apparently, according to the Irish Times, Dublin traffic now slower than London. In congestion terms, we are one of the worst capital cities in the EU. This is total boom is back territory. People stuck in cars for hours on end.
I know. It's incredible, isn't it? So much coverage on this issue. And, you know, the 40% increase in traffic on the on the M50, and I think really good article as well on the inside of the Dublin bus control room, and anybody who has to commute to work as the articles cover, it's just incredible. And where is this all going to end? And I think this week it was particularly bad. Mark and I were talking off air with the Lewis problems and the weather compounding the whole thing. So it
on the Dublin bus control room, did they mention ghost buses at all in that discussion? Did they give any explanation for why we still have ghost buses?
Buses going into service. It's certainly an issue on how it's all going to play. And I think again. But I think for next year as well, when the presidency takes place and the increase in traffic and on the security concerns, mm-hmm. the European Political Committee meeting, the largest ever gathering of international leaders, I think it's I fear it may not get necessarily any better.
And of course, one of the problems now is it is unpredictably inconsistent. There was a time when Monday to Friday traffic was always bad, whereas now it depends on when everybody has decided to come in the office in the one day. And one day there could be nothing, and the next year in deep congestion.
Yeah. And that's true, and that is very difficult for anybody who's in charge of this stuff. But there's a couple of things that I'd say. One, speaking as somebody who lives on the Lewis line, first of all, it what happened this week highlights how grateful every single one of us who are living on that line should be every single day for the fact that it's there, because once it was taken off the system, and Lewis's communications were woeful, and okay, we understand that they had a problem, but you know, you need to do a little bit better on comms, to put it mildly, than they did. But I mean, equally, you know, the self-indulgence and the self-centeredness of all of us living on the south side of Dublin perhaps was maybe shown up, because, you know, given the way some people were talking, you'd swear that there were air core food lifts that were necessary to be coming on to people living along the side of the lines. But I came in on a bike on the second day of the of the problem, and I'm going back on Waterloo Road at that evening in rain, and the bus lane is blocked because there are four cars parked on it. You know, point we were talking about before we came in here, organizations should be in charge of their own realm. And if you take the M50, a road I drive on far too frequently for my liking, the number of times that all of us are overtaken by cars weaving between four lanes or speeding or going too slow or behaving ignorantly or stupidly or whatever it is, I cannot understand why that whole road cannot be camered properly at every single bridge, every single junction. And if you do anything that in any way breaches the rules, you're getting a 500 quid fine, 6 points, and your car seized for a week. You know,
straight to the Hang 'em high end of the spectrum, Mark. Yeah, no, but
Mark feels very strongly about this, Anton. I can verify.
I think the same thing about people putting their feet up on Lewis seat.
Oh, so, no.
You know,
there's limit. Okay, it's too early for such a pet.
Well, little did we know the impact that it had this week. You are familiar with Hans Zimmer. Hans Zimmer, the Hollywood composer?
Yes.
Well, apparently we got a text to say 2 weeks ago, Hollywood's favourite composer hadn't reckoned with Dublin's apocalyptic gridlock as he made his way to the Three Arena for the seismic opening evening of a two-night residency. Who knew?
Who knew indeed?
He began, "I apologise for us starting late, but you have a traffic problem out there that you have to sort out," he said when he took to the stage 15 minutes behind schedule. Whatever about impacting the citizens of them, once we're impacting Hans Zimmer,
something has to change with that. And you know what? It's interesting as well.
Hang on, another one says, Dublin doesn't have the worst traffic in Europe, not by a long chalk. Try the Paris Périphérique or Toulouse. Mm. And as for rush hour in Brussels, take a chill pill. Saying Dublin is the worst sounds like something that a person who never drives in other European cities.
I never said it was the worst.
I think I might have said that.
Yeah.
But there's a bigger issue about state authorities not taking charge of what they're supposed to be running. And if you're in charge of the M50, it is not good enough for somebody in TII to come on as they did the other day, saying basically nothing. There's nothing we can do. There are things that they can do. I'm not saying that they will solve the problem. The problem is we have too much traffic. But are ways in which we should be able to manage what we have better than we are doing.
The M50 surely was doomed by design. It was originally meant to be a bypass that then became a suburban feeder road into the entire suburbs of Ireland. And the only way really to fix it is start again at Balbriggan and finish in Greystones.
No, it isn't, because building another new road isn't going to achieve anything. We'll just simply fill that in the way that we fill this one. We have to fundamentally rethink how we are doing public transport. And if you had a situation where if you could live in Salins and get there are train services, but they're nowhere near adequate, according to the colleagues of mine who live in the place. You need feeder buses, glider buses, yeah, like they have in Belfast, and you have a clear road in front of you. And if there is anybody who is parked or impeding in front of that,
they won't do it again.
But the challenge is actually, and I have some colleagues who commute from Kildare, they get the train into Euston and then they have to get a bus across town.
Yeah.
And just if there's any delay or challenges, you know, that's incredibly, it needs to be more joined up and user friendly. And the articles were talking about introducing a congestion charge possibly as well. So, Mark, you'd love that.
Well, the only problem with congestion charges, I wonder, is it's deeply unfair depending on your income. If you're rich, who cares? If you're poor, a congestion charge means the city is closed to you, which is, it seems.
Well, you get around that by having higher charges for bigger cars.
Surely rich people can buy small cars too.
That is true.
Now, we should give a quick warning. There is an interesting piece that Adrian Wechler has in respect of fraud. I was actually talking to a guy during the week, and as we were discussing it, he looked at his phone and said, another one of these +44 numbers. Yeah. There seems to be a rake of UK-based fraud calls, a sort of an epidemic at the moment.
Absolutely. No, Adrian has a great piece, and anyone who has been a victim or susceptible to that, it's incredible. And for those of us that kind of work and engage on a UK basis, it's incredibly annoying because you don't know whether it's a legit number or not. So Adrian has some handy, useful tips on how to potentially block it and screen it out. But it seems to go in phases, doesn't it? Like there's a proliferation of them and then they stop. But he's talking about some of the new operating system updates across Apple and the Google and the Android phones, and some of the work that the Irish telecoms regulator says it's going to work on to try and curb it. But it's certainly something to be mindful of and for people to keep an eye out on. But hopefully it won't increase too much over the Christmas period. But it is really annoying.
Point where you're saying that as well, as it isn't even just that if not to give them information if you answer, that the mere act of answering confirms that your number is a real number, and you end up then getting into a database.
That makes it very difficult for anybody who in any way deals with British companies or people across the Irish Sea or Northern Ireland. You know,
tricky time to be Britain and Ireland editor of the Irish Times in the face of this.
Well, I downloaded the new Apple update. I'm not entirely sure it's actually working. It doesn't seem to be making any difference.
Text to say, in Paris, if traffic is too congested, at times they make the public transport free. Do they? Another, ever seen those Asian megacities and traffic flows nicely? Can we just contract a team, bring them in for 3 months to look with fresh eyes at Dublin traffic and the fiasco that is Galway? They'll sort it out. Also, what do you expect when you build hundreds of new housing estates and apartments, but don't upgrade the local infrastructure accordingly?
And maybe if we get Metrolink built as well, it might help alleviate some of the problems.
Now, there is a news relating to Liam Neeson. Liam Neeson has become now famous almost at this point as much for his voice as for his acting, because he tends to lend his voice to an awful lot of stuff, including, for instance, the sort of Tourism Ireland ads and campaigns for Ireland. He's pushed the boat out a bit far this time. He's now the voice of a new documentary that, in essence, is anti-vax, anti-modern science, and pro and featuring RFK Jr.
Well, he is. It's a program called Plague of Corruption, 80 Years of Pharmaceutical Corruption Exposed. And it's based on a book written by an American journalist. And it speaks approvingly of Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who's Trump's Health and Human Services Secretary. And as you say, Neeson does the narration on it. Now, since then, he has denied that he is anti-vax, and he's making the point that he's a UNICEF ambassador, and he has largely pushed, and very strongly pushed, UN campaigns to vaccinate children in sub-Saharan Africa and all the rest of it. But it shows you the dangers for any of these people signing up to do any program, because, you know, you don't see the script in advance of agreeing to be the narrator on the documentary.
But you do lend it credibility.
But you do lend it.
No question, that voice gives it heft.
Yeah, yeah. No, that is the danger of it. And, you know, it's something he's done once. I wonder if he'll do something like this again. Because it does show the problem when you're well known, your voice is immediately recognisable to millions of people. If you're going to appear on programmes like that, there's no point producing clarifying statements afterwards saying that you're a UNICEF ambassador. It's too late.
53106, if you want to get in touch, or 087-1400-106. The other thing, Noel, is we're coming to that point at the end of the year where we are doing the sort of the reviews of the top 25s, the top 10s, the top 100s, all of that lark. And the Indo has the top five, no more, the top 10 queries for Alexa. And these are the Irish queries.
And you know, in homes all over Ireland now, people's Alexa machines are going balloopas.
Do they when you say?
They do, absolutely.
Oh, little did I know I had this power.
No, it's true. And I feel, I have to confess, I feel woefully uncool and inadequate with my humble Alexa inquiries. Keith Kelly has a great piece talking about the most commonly asked questions. So, top of the pile, pardon the awful pun, but how tall is Taylor Swift? And then, of course,
That's the most common thing asked in 2025.
And a lot of queries on sport. What is the population of the earth, the value of Bitcoin? And in Ireland, a really, really common one, how long do you cook a potato for?
I think that's a very strange question because it's entirely dependent on how you're cooking it. Yeah. Like you would boil a potato for a different length of time, surely, than you would bake one.
Can we get one of our famous chefs in here? And the second most common query was, how long do you boil an egg for? Again, it's a matter of personal taste and preference.
The third answer, I think, or is it the fourth, is where is Leeds? I would just love to know what prompted so many numbers of people to actually ask that question. But I can't for the life of me figure out.
The most popular thing asked of Alexa in 2025 was, where is Leeds?
Yes. Yeah, according to this story here. Yeah.
We will finish on some sad news, Mark. I know this is the one that you've been dying to talk about ever since we began. This is the story that Twink is sadly bereaved. She has lost her parrot.
Yeah, just for the record, this is a story that you insisted on, not me. But anyway, this is one of these stories now where anything you say will be deemed to be hurtful and cruel. Her pet parrot, Timberlake, 26 years old, died tragically during rehearsals. We are not told how. So perhaps we need some more information on that. She's clearly very upset by it. And you can just imagine that if you have any creature as part of your life for 26 years.
For that length of time.
I mean, it's very sad, but, you know.
Mark, thank you. Happy Christmas. Likewise, Noel, thank you very much. Happy Christmas.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.